followed her to school one day and broke the teacher's rule. What a time did they have that day at school.
I'm fit to fight, 'cause woman, you know that mess ain't right. All that meat and no potatoes just ain't right, like green tomatoes. Yes, I'm steaming, I'm really screaming. All that meat and no potatoes.
And welcome to Happy Times with Sonia and Sometimes Cassie. We're broadcasting live on WOBC 91.5 FM Oberlin Public Radio. I'm Sonia Oram. Carl, do you have to be cleaning in the studio while I'm on the air? Sonia, this is a 24-hour radio station. I have to clean the studio sometime, don't I? I promise you won't even know I'm here. All right. I guess this place could use a little sprucing up. Well, folks, last time we listened to several recordings of the Waldstein Piano Sonata, and I decided that Horowitz played it the best, particularly in his 1956 recording. I got some comments from listeners. Carl, you have to do that right now? Could you cut it out with the vacuuming? This place is never gonna get cleaned. As I was saying, one person liked Horowitz's later recording better, and one person suggested that I give another chance to a recording by someone whose name I can't pronounce, and another person told me to learn how to pronounce names before I go on the air. So I called the person who suggested the other recording, and the name is Ronald Brotegem. I played the beginning of this in the last show, and I commented that he had a much fuller sound than the other performers. I liked the way he played the first section of the first movement, but the second section I prefer much more internal. Just as a reminder, here is the recording of Horowitz playing that second theme. Thomas Carroll, the friend who suggested the Brotegem recording, is an early music performer and said that the piano he played on was not capable of sustaining enough for that section to be as expressive as Horowitz played it. Just for comparison, before we forget what the Horowitz sounded like, let's listen to Brotegem play that second theme. I think the voicing is well done, but the mood doesn't feel as internal as Horowitz's version. However, given that Brotegem performed it on an early piano, I wondered if Beethoven intended it to be as expressive as Horowitz played it. I went ahead and emailed Oberlin piano professor Peter Takash. Mr. Takash immediately responded, "Hi Sonia, thanks for your thoughtful question and love of Waldstein. I haven't heard either recording you spoke about, although, of course, I know about Horowitz and Brotegem, but I think it's telling that Beethoven uses dolce every time the second theme occurs in E, A, and C major. Also, E major is an especially meaningful key for him, representing hope and ideal love. For those non-musicians out there, dolce means sweet. I would say the second theme should be played expressively, but also with purity and no sentimentality. So maybe it's halfway between Horowitz and Brotegem. I don't think there is any historical performance dictum against expressive playing. Regards, Peter Takash." So, I don't think that Horowitz was overly expressive by any means, and I still stand by my feelings about the superiority of his recording. However, I'm sure that Brotegem has some things to offer, as he is an early music specialist. Brotegem recorded on a forte piano, which is the type of piano around in Beethoven's time. I commented last week that he had a very full sound and played really staccato notes. Well, the piano he used for this recording was built from a model from around 1819. The piano has a thin soundboard, light hammers, and thicker strings. Each register of the instrument has its own sound quality, so I think that under the circumstances, Brotegem did pretty well. Well, thank you, Thomas, for telling me about him. With all these things in mind, let's listen to a new take of the same piece. Here is Ronald Brotegem playing the Waldstein Piano Sonata. Thank you.
Sonia? Sonia, wake up. The piece is over.
Whoa. I had the weirdest dream. I dreamt I was a rock star, and I was playing the guitar on stage, and everyone was cheering. Classical music isn't that popular.
The Earth has a natural balance of life. Global warming is disrupting that balance. You can help fight global warming if every family replaced 3 frequently used light bulbs with compact fluorescent bulbs. It's like taking 3.5 million cars off the road. Find out how you can help at fightglobalwarming.com.
Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
So I was at my nephew's Little League game the other day, and the kid pitching was throwing tomatoes instead of curveballs. It was a messy game, to say the least. But eating a healthy diet of fruits and vegetables instead of throwing them could keep your body healthy and strong, packed with nutrients that could give you the energy you need to hit that grand slam. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
When you go to a coaching, bring a score. It looks unprofessional if you don't, and then your coach has to hover over you while you're playing. That's really not fun. Teenagers think they know everything, but they don't. Talk to your kids about sleepwalking. It may seem funny, but if you're the one waking up stranded in the middle of the street in your onesie night after night, it's really not. If you're playing a piece with piano accompaniment, learn what the piano part sounds like. Then you'll be together and maybe even in tune. Study the piano score. You'll thank yourself later. Moving along, bottlenose dolphins... Carl? Carl, where's the rest of my script? What does it look like? It's handwritten on a paper like this. Oh, you mean it was all crumpled up? What do you mean, was? I think it might have gotten thrown out. Unintentionally, of course. Carl, how am I supposed to finish the show? If you pre-recorded it, this wouldn't happen. So now you're Mr. Advice Man. What were you saying about dolphins? I don't know. You know, I used to do dolphin research in Florida before the economy crashed and I had to come be a custodian. Really? Do you do those tests on their memories? Oh, yeah. Dolphins actually learn things really quickly. They can even tell if a woman is pregnant before she can. No way. Yeah, once a woman came to the Marine Center and looked at a dolphin, the dolphin flipped over to show her stomach because she was pregnant. The woman went home and found out that she was pregnant, too. But how do they know? They use echolocation to get around, which is like seeing for us, except they can see through objects. So the dolphin could sense the baby inside the woman. Dolphins can also walk on their tails in the water. Cool. Oh, hey, here's the third page of my script. All right, next we are going to listen to Peter Schickele's oratorio, The Seasonings.
It always amazes me that at this point, after many concerts and recording, there are still people who doubt the existence of PDQ Bach. Well, what can I say? The idea that his works were actually written by Christopher Marlowe seems ridiculous. Aside from the stylistic problems involved, I'm sure Marlowe could have done a better job. We also have references, previous to mine, about PDQ Bach, which should silence any doubt. I'm sure that many of you know that Robert Schumann, when he first became acquainted with the music of Brahms, wrote in his magazine, "Hats off, gentlemen, a genius." In the next issue, before the publication of which the music of PDQ Bach became known to him, he wrote, "Hats back on, gentlemen, an idiot." PDQ Bach was well liked by his friends and also by his acquaintances. The story is told about the time that a bunch of the boys were sitting around having a hot session of trio sonatas, and the violinist's G-string broke, and PDQ Bach, who is known, after all, for the wigs he wore, they were particularly fine, offered to take his wig off and use it to replace it, and so they used a box hair for the G-string. Well, that's true. You know, truth is just truth. You can't have opinions about truth. For the first piece on our program, we have the grand oratorio, The Seasonings, Schickele number 1/2 TSP. This piece is dedicated to one of his girlfriends at the time, and it has monumental proportions, unlike any other piece we've discovered of his. The fugue might be called the grossest fugue of all. It is really something. The final thing I'd like to mention about this piece is the keyboard writing. Now, some of you may know that Scarlatti, the great keyboard composer, got so fat during his later years that the hand crossings, which were so common in his earlier works, disappeared in the later works because he was too fat to cross his hands. That's true, you know. Nobody seems to take these concerts seriously. That's the one thing I don't care for about this. I mean, I'm willing to go through it to get PDQ Bach in front of the public. But the fact of the matter is that PDQ Bach stopped writing solo keyboard works completely in the last period of his life because he got so fat he couldn't even reach the keyboard. He just couldn't reach the instrument. He did develop a way of playing side saddle, however, that led to a whole interesting school of continuo playing because, of course, he couldn't get all the notes. So when you see in a music history book a reference to a sonata for two violins and discontinuo, you know that stems from this practice of PDQ Bach. So I think we're ready now for one of the most austere, sparse, hard to get to, and therefore greatest pieces that PDQ Bach has ever written.
calculator, but this tube is going to run an hour and 20 minutes overtime, and I must insist you not play it.
Thank you. Thank you.
We just listened to Peter Schickele's oratorio, The Seasonings. You are listening to WOBC, Oberlin Public Radio, 91.5 FM. I'm Sonia Orem. If you enjoyed listening to the show and want to hear more, visit my website at soniaorem.com. That's S-O-N-I-A-O-R-A-M. There you can find my videos, paintings, and if you, for some reason, want to, listen to me play the viola. I'm planning a show coming up where I'm going to play recordings of everyone's greatest musical flubs. I'm asking conservatory students or any musicians to send in music of their biggest mess-ups in performances. I have a big pile of my own just waiting to get shared with the world. So if you have anything hidden away in your iTunes library that sounds like this... Please send it our way, because we all want to hear it. Now, I won't say anything about that recording, except that one of the parties was sight-reading, two of the parties were playing from memory, and it was all in front of Marilyn McDonald's studio class in fall of 08. Yeah, so send in your recordings. After all, we all mess up, and it's pretty funny. With that in mind, I would like to congratulate all of my fellow string players who participated in the concerto competition. I believe that it was an achievement for every one of you to get up on that stage and perform a concerto, and you should feel proud regardless of the results. The only true losers are the ones who didn't even do the competition to begin with.
Everything is falling apart, yeah.